Chapter 63. The President returned to the White House from the Kennedy Space Center late in the evening and went directly to the Oval Office. After secretly meeting with Steinmetz and the moon colonists and hearing the enthusiastic reports of their explorations, he felt exhilarated. Sleep was forgotten as he walked into his office alone, inspired to plan a new range of space goals. He sat down behind the big desk and opened a lower drawer. He lifted out a walnut humidor and removed a large cigar. He peeled off the cellophane, stared a moment at the dark brown, tightly wrapped leafy cover, and inhaled the heady aroma. It was a Monte Cristo, the finest cigar Cuba made, and banned from American import by the trade embargo on Cuban goods. The President relied on an old, trusted school pal to smuggle him a box every 2 months from Canada. Even his wife and closest aides were unaware of his cash. He clipped one end and exactingly lit the other, wondering, as he always did, what kind of uproar the public would raise if they discovered his clandestine and slightly illegal indulgence. Tonight he did not give a damn. He was riding high. The economy was holding, and Congress had finally gotten around to passing tough budget cuts and a flat tax law. The international scene had entered a cooling-off period, however temporary, and his popularity polls showed him up 5 percentage points. And now he was about to make a political profit on his predecessor's foresight, just as Nixon did after the success of the Apollo program. The stunning success of the moon colony would be the high-water mark of his administration. His next goal was to enhance his image on Latin American affairs. Castro had cracked open the door with his offer of a treaty. Now, if the President could slip his foot over the threshold before it slammed shut again, he might have a fighting chance to neutralize Marxist influence in the Americas. The prospects appeared gloomy at the moment. It was most likely that Pitt and Jesse LeBaron had been either shot or arrested. If they had not, then it was only a matter of hours before the inevitable happened. The only course of action was to slip someone else into Cuba to make contact with Castro. His intercom buzzed. "Yes?"
"Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. President," said a White House operator. "But Mr. Brogan is calling, and he says it is urgent he speak with you."
"It's quite all right. Please put him on." There was a slight click, and Martin Brogan said, "Did I catch you in bed?"
"No, I'm still up. What's on your mind that couldn't wait until tomorrow's briefing?"
"I'm still at Andrews Field. My deputy was waiting for me with a translated document that was taken from Cayo Santa Maria. It contained some pretty hot material."
"Can you fill me in?"
"The Russians are going to knock off Castro the day after tomorrow. The operation is codenamed Rum and Cola. It details the complete takeover of the Cuban government by Soviet agents." The President watched the blue smoke from the Havana cigar curl toward the ceiling.
"They're making their move sooner than we figured," he said thoughtfully. "How do they intend to eliminate Castro?"
"The wild part of the plan," said Brogan. "The GRU arm of the KGB intends to blitz the city along with him."
"Havana?"
"A damn good chunk of it."
"Jesus Christ, you're talking a nuclear bomb."
"I've got to be honest and say the document does not state the exact means, but it's quite clear that some kind of explosive device is being smuggled into the harbor by ship that can level 4 square miles.
I can't believe Antonov is a party to such horror. Why not send in a local team of hitmen and gun Castro down? What's to be gained by taking 100,000 innocent victims with him?"
"Castro is a cult figure to the Cubans," explained Brogan. "A cartoon communist to us, maybe, but a revered god to them. A simple assassination will ignite an overwhelming groundswell of resentment against the Soviet-backed parties who replace him. But a major disaster, that would give the new leaders a rallying cry and a cause to incite the people to close ranks behind a new government, particularly if it was proven the United States was the culprit, specifically the CIA.
I still can't conceive of such a monstrous scheme."
"I assure you, Mr. President, everything is spelled out in black and white." Brogan paused to scan a page of the document. "Odd thing, it's vague about the details of the explosion, but very specific in listing the step-by-step propaganda campaign to blame us.
It even lists the names of the Soviet cohorts and the positions they are to move into after they seize control. You may be interested to learn that Alicia Cordero is to be the new president. God help us. She's twice the fanatic Fidel is. In any case, the Soviets win and we lose. The president laid the cigar in an ashtray and closed his eyes. The problems never end, he mused. One begets another. The triumphs of office do not last very long. The pressure and the frustrations never let up. Can our Navy stop those ships? He asked. According to the schedule, two of them have already docked in Havana, answered Brogan.
The third should be entering the harbor any hour. I had the same idea, but we're an inch early and a mile late. We must have the names of those ships. I've already got my people checking on all shipping arrivals in Havana Harbor. They should have identification within the hour. Of all the times for Castro to hide out, the president said in exasperation. We found him.
Where?
At his country retreat. He's cut off all contact with the outside world. Even his closest advisors and the Soviet bigwigs can't reach him.
Who do we have on our team who can meet him face to face?
Brogan grunted.
No one.
There must be somebody we can send in. If Castro was in a communicative mood, I can think of at least 10 people on our payroll who could get through the front gate, but not as things stand now. The president toyed with the cigar, fumbling for inspiration. How many Cubans can you trust in Havana who work the docks and have maritime experience?
I'd have to check.
Guess.
Off the top of my head, maybe 15 or 20.
All right, the president said. Round them up. Have them get on board those ships somehow and find which one is carrying the bomb.
Someone who knows what he's doing will have to defuse it. We'll cross that bridge when we learn where it's hidden.
A day and a half isn't much time, Brogan said glumly. Better we concentrate on sorting out the mess afterward.
You'd better get the show moving. Keep me informed every 2 hours. Turn everyone you've got in the Cuban department loose on this thing.
What about warning Castro?
My job. I'll handle it.
Good luck, Mr. President.
Same to you, Martin.
The president hung up. His cigar had gone out. He relit it, then picked up the phone again and placed a call to Ira Hagen.